just a danged horse race. It's something that's printed in the racing form, and you've got to look at some things and put some patterns together, and that's what you're doing. That leads into the idea of pattern recognition, which is a concept that we've talked about a lot, and people seem to somehow be able to to miss that notion. Pattern recognition is when you see something once, you go, hmm. You see it happen again, you go, hmm. You see it happen three times, you go, I'd like $60 on this one, and I'd like 40. You know, you watch these things, and you begin detecting that there are patterns. When you got your model going, the Brohammer model, which you always do from before the race is run. I ran that into the ground last year here. The idea of the Brohammer model, you've got all your contestants, all your real contenders. You've got their sorted rankings in each of the areas that you're working with, depending on the program. Whoever the winner is, you got his early, his sustained, his W, his whatever else, all of those numbers down there. If you begin seeing a lot of ones and twos in a column, that's a pattern. If you're not keeping a model, how are you going to see a pattern? So that's one of the concepts also, that we have a certain minimal amount of paperwork. But you have to really want success enough. You have to want enough to win to bother to do some real simple, simple, elementary kinds of bookkeeping. If it wasn't real simple, most of us up here wouldn't have mastered it. I mean, there's not, we don't come before you because we're all up in the upper stratosphere of IQ. Well, except for Michael. But he isn't really, but you know, he's got this Uncle Luigi, and you got a three Mikey Nice, so you never know what happened. You wake up in the morning, something funny in your bed, you know? No, actually, Michael's is not only the resident magician, but he and I have roomed together several times. The first year, I thought it was a little spooky rooming with a guy that every time I'd wake up, like in the middle of the night, and see him floating above the bed. That's, you know. Anyway, another concept is that we're really looking at three little races that go to make up one big race. Okay, that's sort of what the idea of pace is about, a pace methodology. We're breaking the race into increments. That just means segments, pieces, parts. And then we're looking at incremental velocity. In those increments, as we're going through in the feet per second in these three hunks of a race, you could build three graphs if you wanted to out of it. You can do all kinds of different mechanical things with it. But the important thing is we're looking at three separate little races. When you hear people talk about a great third fraction, that's a little short race from the second call to the finish. If you hear about turn time, that's a great little race within a race. We're really looking at three that make up one race. The public sees one race. We see more races than that. If we see a horse that does a terrific job in a couple of those little races, maybe he didn't win the big race, but he won in a couple of those little races, and we pit his little three races against another horse or several other horses' little three races, then we're working with the matchup. We're starting to see how the horses fit against one another in those three little races, which has to tell you then how the horse is going to do in the big race. So we're linking together three chunks, three segments. So you're not handicapping, you're never really handicapping a horse race. You're handicapping different contenders in three little races apiece, at least. The matchup, then, is what we're doing when we put those three races, stack them up against each other. In many of the programs, most of the programs, I guess, there's a dream race matchup that'll give you the dream horse, the best little race that any of the contenders has run. If you've got one horse that has the best first fraction and one that has another one that has the best second fraction and yet another horse with the best third fraction, it takes those and posts them up there and then you put everybody against it and look and see how they do. How do they fall out? What little races do they excel in? What little races do they not excel in? And it's up to you with your model and your knowledge of your track to know which of those little races is most important. During the beginner's session, earlier today, Dick pointed out a horse that had what I call a pathological need to be first. It was a pace line, a set of pace lines, in which the horse was never second at the second call. Every single second call position, the horse was first. All races shown, it was first. It's in the first race in the workbook. And you know, that's a kind of an obvious tip-off when you're sorting them out. This is a horse who's going to be bucking for the lead on the second call. I mean, this is just that horse's behavior pattern, which is another concept. When you're doing the matchup, when you're doing anything with the methodology, horses are creatures of habit just like people are. Now, again, this is why a clinical psychologist could see some patterns and begin doing some pattern recognition that a lot of people missed, because he was looking for creatures of habit. He sure knew that horse players were creatures of habit. Isn't it interesting that things they bet on are creatures of habit? We tend to look for these patterns. That's one of the key concepts, I think. We get it down to a few contenders. That's a key concept also. You don't put everybody in North America into the race. There's the true contender, and then there's the horses Jimmy calls other horses just in there to get beat. And that's right. There are horses that are entered because they've got to go someplace. You know, everybody's got to be somewhere. I think that's a Zen thought, isn't it, Michael?
Myron Cohen.
Myron Cohen. Well, it's a Myron Cohen, not a Zen Cohen. Thank you. Thank you. So, oh, I could deteriorate so rapidly from here, couldn't I? Remember a couple of years ago, all the Californians went to the bar and they left you and me in here at like 10:30? Okay, you guys take the last section. Oh, it was bizarre. I was doing animal noises. Things got very strange. That was Finger Lakes. That was my Finger Lakes imitation. But I love the track. I really do. But seriously, folks, if you put in every horse in the race, you may stumble on some alpha candidate that had one incredible fraction once in its life. You happen to get that pace line. He's going to be number one in some ranking. Does he deserve to be number one in any ranking? No. I mean, is he a realistic contender today? No. But he may be up there someplace. Getting an idea of who is a real contender, who is not a real contender, that's a key concept. Predictive pace lines. We still get asked by people, you know, is this the last line? Is it, what do you do here? Do you do that? Do you want the fastest speed rating? Do you want the, you know, Predictive pace line. What you want is something that you figure is going to tell you how the horse is likely to run today. And nobody can tell you they know exactly how the horse is going to run today based on anything. But what you're shooting for is a line that's pretty going to give you a pretty good idea, that you believe is going to give you a good idea of how this horse is going to run today. That's a function that's in part very left brain, rational, linear logic thinking. But there's a lot that goes on in a horse race. And just like there is in life, you need some of the right brain. In fact, I think a pretty good amount of the right brain. Right brain will help you with things like pattern recognition. You need to just relax and look at it and understand that eventually you're going to get to where pace lines do sort of loom up at you. Sometimes the last line, most recent line, looms up at you. Sometimes the one at the bottom of the page, Dick Schmidt found, loomed up at him today in one race, and that's how he won the race. Had a cold exacta, even with his two horses. One came in first and was disqualified and taken down to second, but he had the one that was second also. Those were his two horses, so he had it. No matter how it had gone, he had it in a $57 or something exacta. So
predicted the DQ.
No, that's Tom Brohammer does that. Head of the stretch, this horse is going to do that, the jockey's nose is going to start to bleed, three things are going to fall off his cap, one button's going to burst, and Tom's incredible. Tom is the resident. He's the psychic. He looks at these things, sees these patterns, and then plays the movie in his head. And Dick will tell you. I mean, there was a race where Tom said, I've forgotten now what the details. Don't recall what the details are, but it was a brilliant call. This horse was going to get a little bit boxed because such and such and such was going to happen. And Dick said, it's a horse race. What are you talking about? It's only a mile and something, and this is going to happen. They came around the thing, and Dick does it in his Trevor, Denman? Is that the guy? Trevor Denman imitation. That's exactly what happened. They came around. This horse got in here. Another one came here. He got boxed. Exactly what Tom had said, because he sees the movie.
Just blew Dick's presentation there.
No, just one major illustration, but that's okay. He's out of the room. It's all fair when you're out of the room.
How can you tell?
Whether he's out of the room or whether it's fair. Are we being cosmic or just nasty, Michael? At any rate, that's part of the business of looking at the pace lines, doing the matchup. We did a great exercise one or two times ago in Las Vegas, I guess, where Howard gave everybody 3 minutes to look at a race and start calling it. out loud. Just start calling where the position, where the horses were at the various positions. And then we voted on who was where. And something like 60-70% of the room had the first three horses in their first, like, four horses. You know, I mean, they were basically, everybody knew who was in the money by the end of doing that. Probably because they didn't have the opportunity, and I'll put that in quotes because it's not really, it's a bogus opportunity, to sit and sweat over it and worry about it and fret and manufacture a lot of stuff for and to themselves. They looked at it, patterns came up, the right brain kicked in. They said, this is only a game anyway. I mean, this is just an exercise, nothing threatening about it. So they started calling the race. Lo and behold, they saw, when they did this little matchup, they saw in their heads how the race was going to run, and most of the people, the majority of the people, had the first three horses right up there. It works. It really works. And that's one of the, I think one of the most, to me, one of the very most important concepts. And this is strictly my impression of the concepts that that loomed off the page at me, if you will, Howard. But, you know, there'll be others. You'll be hearing from others during the course of this weekend. I tend to be much more right brain than left brain. People ask me things sometimes on the phone about the formula for this or that. I usually... Don't listen, Howard. I don't know many of the formulas for this or that because I have a computer and I keep the batteries changed regularly. The computer knows the formulas for this and that. On the other hand, the computer sits there when I go, hey, what's a good baseline here? Who are the contenders? It just sits there. Doesn't do a thing. Very quiet the computer gets when you say, hey, who's a contender? Who's a baseline? You can hit a computer. It won't say anything. It also won't pick your contenders. It won't pick your pace lines. So I do what I'm good at, and rather than using up lots of pencils and an enormous amount of time, I let the computer do what it's good at, and we work pretty well together. The whole brain has to be involved in your handicapping. I think that's the concept that I'd finish up with. This is something that I guess why it's so much fun for most of us is it's not an activity that's just about horses. It's more about horse sense, and that's the horse sense of the handicapper, you. It's more about how you're going to use the attributes that you've been given. It's as though you've been given $1 million. How are you going to spend it? You've been given billions of brain cells. How are you going to spend them? We can use the methodology and understand more about us, and in the process, become very successful at handicapping. The bottom line is it takes a lot of effort. Richard Diamond mentioned one of the things we do is, not Richard Schmidt, one of the things we do is we're putting an attempt here to present how you become a winner. And we set it up, but you've got to take it from us. Okay, we'll present it, but you have to pick up on it. We can't make you a winner. We can't make anybody in this room a winner. It's something you can do. And Jenny Butler, who can't be here, but she always says, and I'll chime in for her, I think, kick this in on behalf of Jenny, you already are a winner. She uses a little analogy, illustration I think is interesting, that the egg that you started out from was the one that was fertilized by the sperm that got there first. Okay? So you're a winner to begin with. Because your conception was a matter of somebody getting to that finish line first.
Early pig sperm? Or
it depends on the part of the country that you're...
Just a question.
Yeah. That's Ginny's illustration, mind you, because I would, you know, especially wearing my collar, never say such a thing. But at any rate, I think it's a darn good illustration. You're born a winner. There's no reason not to just go ahead and claim that. To me, that's the most important concept, is there's nobody here that can't do this. There are people here that won't. There are people here who will choose not to. You may choose at a level of mind which isn't currently available to you. You know, I'm really trying. And Doc's favorite, one of his favorite sayings is trying is lying. Put your pencil or pen or whatever you've got, those of you that thought about taking notes, set it down in front of you. And then try and pick it up. Do an illustration for him, Michael. We don't have pens. Try to pick up your pen. Thank you. That was trying to pick his pen up. You notice it was very effective. This is not trying to pick my pen up. This is picking my pen up. Trying is I mean, even though that was tedious to watch, you ought to talk to some clients sometime late in the evening. There's trying and lying, and they rhyme, and there's a link there. Think about that. It isn't a matter of what we're trying. It's a matter of doing. Just do some of this. Break down some races into those three little races. Do some of that. Do some of that matchup. Do look for some patterns. It really is a matter of letting yourself be a winner, choosing to claim the fact that you already are. With all the concepts you're going to hear, I think I better round mine off with that. And during the course of the evening, I hope it's going to be cooler in this room.
It's getting cooler.
Does it seem to be getting cooler?
Yeah. I felt the cold air.
Oh, boy, we got a mixed review on that. Hands for cooler. Any hands for cooler? Hands for warmer. Ah, the warmers win. Well, it's a warm crowd. That's good. You're warm people.
It's cold in here.
Puff harder on your pipe.
It's the placebo effect.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Think that it's cooler in here. After all, Howard's rarely wrong. If he says it's cooler, it's probably cooler. Meanwhile, I'm going to rattle cages and see if we can do something and make sure we get the water all refreshed and off the break. And next speaker.
Thank you, Bert.
I'll keep working on that.
And whenever you call me on the phone and you say you're trying, I'm going to tell you trying is lying. That is one of my favorite subjects. That's a psychotherapeutic term. Everybody who's dealt with in the field of psychiatry or psychology or clinical work knows that when a patient says, I'll try, that the patient is not going to do it. You have the power to do it. If you say to yourself when you get up in the morning, I am going to be a winner, you will be a winner. This is not just psychological gibberish. This has been a phrase that has been accepted by the world since the Bible. Shakespeare did it. The Bible said, that which ye fear the most will surely befall you. And that's what most horse players have, is terrible anxiety, fear of everything can go wrong. And if you fear all the things that can go wrong, they will go wrong. But the Bible and Shakespeare in their own way also said, that which ye seek, ye shall find, if you truly seek it. This is why we never established ourselves or tried to establish ourselves as something that taught handicapping. All we ever wanted to do was teach winning. I thought this was practical, so I knew nothing about handicapping. I thought winning was the goal, but I find out that with many, many professional handicappers, winning is not truly their goal. One of the most astute handicappers in the world got up at one of our seminars and said, I would rather win with a thorough knowledge of the factors of handicapping, or I'd rather lose, he said, a race, with full knowledge of all the factors of handicapping than win just using Sarton's numbers. And that is the attitude that most of your mainstream handicappers have. They feel that if they don't have a complete overview of everything having to do with the horses, from the trainers, to the jockeys, to the medications, to the breeding, and all other factors, that they're not complete handicappers, and winning is only secondary. So we eliminate an awful lot of things in the methodology that have to do with handicapping or with the knowledge of horses. Well, let me give you an example on the subject of trainers and jockeys, because I know that's in the back of everybody's mind. Everybody is a closet believer that trainers and jockeys manipulate the race, most of you. Some of you who are new don't know that. You've never been exposed to that, so you don't know that. But a lot of people who have been around handicapping, they said, I've been handicapping for 30 years. I said, are you a winner? No. I said, you didn't handicap for 30 years. You handicapped 1 year 30 times. And that's what he did, because he was still a loser after 30 years. If I lost after 30 years, folks, I sure wouldn't be bragging about it. I lost $3,000 in the first year. I'll grant you that. But I never lost anything since. The thing about trainers and jockeys is quite simple. If the horse you have, that you have picked, has an adequate pace line, or a pace line that predicts he's going to win, he must have been well trained or he would never got that pace line. Does that make sense to you? If the horse has pace lines and past performances that demonstrate that he can win today's race, he must have been well ridden. Because if he wasn't well ridden, he wouldn't have the kinds of pace lines that you would use to predict the winner of a race. So in a sense, we really are handicapping trainers and jockeys automatically. A horse that's badly trained is not going to have the kinds of pace lines that are predicting a win. A horse that is badly ridden will not have pace lines. So we just wouldn't put the horses in if they were badly trained and badly jockeyed. It's as simple as that. So you are, after the fact of studying what the horse did, you are, in a sense, evaluating trainers and jockeys. But the mainstream handicapper does not do that. The mainstream handicapper evaluates the trainer and the jockey first, and then no matter what kind of running lines the horse has, we'll throw the horse out because he doesn't think the trainer is adequate or the jockey is adequate. It's just a matter of whether you're putting the cart before the horse or the horse before the cart, or the trainer before the horse or the horse before the trainer. If you do it the way we suggest, you'll win. If you don't do it the way we suggest, you'll be an expert handicapper, and you'll have wonderful excuses for losing, such as the wind factor, the chill factor, the configuration of the hoofs, and the kind of food it got, or whatever. The object is to win, I think. Now, if you don't agree with me, that's fine. But I suggest that you, if you don't agree with me, at least consider the fact that really, if you're going out there just to trade expertise with your friends and show them all you know about horses, that if that's all your satisfaction you need in life, you must be independently wealthy, and I congratulate you. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to waste my time around a bunch of smelly horses, a bunch of noisy crowd, unless I'm going to win money. I do not love horse racing. Many of you do. I can appreciate your love of horse racing, but I don't love it. This is what I tell you, this is my point of view. I don't expect you to necessarily share it, but I think you should think about it. We're not betting on horses. How many of you think we're betting on horses? Oh, come on. You're just being nice to me. Most of you think you're betting on horses, but think about it. Richard Diamond will tell you that he looks at the futures and he says, there's this future, there's that future, and he prognosticates which one of those futures will develop into a positive investment and which is going down the hill. And he'll buy those futures which he think will be positive at the end of a given time frame. That's exactly what we're doing, except the time frame lasts between 1 minute and 10 seconds and 2 minutes tops. So we can get an immediate response to our prognostication. Horses are merely there for our convenience. They are merely commodities. Well, we predict their value at the end of a minute and 10 or 2 minutes. We are not betting on horses. We are, in fact, betting on our own egos. We are betting on our state of ego, which says, I'm a good predictor. And if you think you're a lousy predictor, you're in trouble, because that horse is not going to carry you. You have got to apply your ego, a positive ego, to saying, I predict that the value in this race lies with horse number 3, winning, placing, or showing, or however you've got the bet. What you're truly betting on is yourself, your ability to predict. That's why it's so important that you have a great self-image. That's why it's so important that you get into the winning habit. Because once you get into that winning habit, it'll never go away once you have that self-esteem. Tom Brohammer had an excellent suggestion, which we've usually done at seminars. We don't plan precisely what we're going to do at a seminar because we want to tailor it around the needs of the people. So I'd like you to think about it, just maybe you already have. He kind of forewarns you. What are the subjects that if you had a better understanding or a thorough understanding of, what are the subjects that you would want explained? If you knew those, you could win. But these are standing in your way, let's say. In your own mind, certain factors are standing in the way of you and total success. Somebody cry out something. Pace line.
Third fraction. Distance changes.
I beg your pardon?
Distance changes.
Distance changes.